So maybe that's why some of these quotes from Hitler are kind of nice, you know, but it's that.
Oh my God.
It's they that, are nice.
They are nice. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Irenicast, the weekly podcast dedicated to conversations on faith and culture. We are your hosts. I'm Jeff.
I'm Mona.
And I'm Alan.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. We've gotten some great feedback on the show over the last 25, 26 episodes that we've been on, and we're actually going to be changing formats. And instead of just rambling in the beginning, we're going to get right into the meat of the conversation. So this week, we're going to be talking about the Duns, and then after our conversation, we're going to be introducing a new segment called Was It Hitler? So the Duns, you ask, what exactly is that? Mona, why don't you explain to the people what it means?
Yeah, you may have heard about this. So you might have heard of the nuns. If you're around kind of Christian conversations at all, or even outside other religious traditions, you might have heard about the nuns, N-O-N-E, not N-U-N. The nuns are people who are considered spiritual but not religious. And this comes out of sociological studies of religion that poll people over a course of time, and they see this trend that people are going from having religious or denominational affiliations to having just kind of being on their own and saying that they don't really ascribe to any sort of affiliation. So they would be considered post-religious, post-church. But there's a new study that has just come out on what are being called the Duns. So this is based on work by sociologists Josh Packard and Ashley Hope. And this is a study that came out really recently called Church Refugees. And they gleaned insights from over 100 in-depth interviews with people who say that they are done with church in particular. So they don't consider themselves spiritual, but not religious. They might consider themselves still very religious, but they're done with church. And I'm reading right now from theduns.com. A blog post called Pastors Becoming Done with Church, which we can talk about later if you want. But this, the book, they say, this website says, the book Church Refugees asserts that the Duns are leaving to do more, not less. They're leaving church to do more, not less. They're not burned out. They're not frustrated. They feel held back by church. And so when this particular blogger asked one of the authors if there were any common themes shared by the people he interviewed, many of whom were former ministers or seminarians, this author offered four perspectives alluding to why these people have left or are leaving. One, they wanted community and they received only judgment. Two, they wanted to affect the life of the church and found only bureaucracy. Three, they wanted a conversation and got only lectures. And four, they wanted meaningful engagement with the world and got only moral prescription. So that kind of culminates the research that has been done around Duns. So that's what we're going to talk about today. I find this really fascinating. We've touched on this kind of things throughout several episodes, but this episode is going to probably be more anecdotal for us, at least for me. I'm in this group of Duns. I don't go to church anymore. So I'm really excited to talk to you guys about what this means and what your take is on it.
This is a subject that really hits home for me because all of those things that you listed are 100% how I feel. But I wouldn't call myself a Dun because maybe I'm an idealist or I'm just a glutton for punishment, but it can't be this way. You know what I mean? Like, it's so frustrating because I feel like I've invested so much into church and I've had a lot of negative experiences with the bureaucracy and church structure and all that kind of stuff. And I've also had so many positive, amazing, life-changing experiences with people within those things. So this frustration is real. And it is, I hate when people dismiss these things like, oh, well, they're just complaining and church hopping and they're using those little whatever words to...
They're just a bunch of hippies.
Yeah, just to dismiss that. And I think mm-hmm. that, and I think a part of that, oh man, I have so many thoughts on this. So please feel free, everyone, to jump in. Because this, honestly, this is my life. And we've shared this off air personally, but I feel caught in the middle coming out of an evangelical background. There's not a lot of educational requirements for being a minister or a pastor of a church. And, you know, I have my bachelor's in theology and decided that I didn't want to go on and get my master's of divinity or even an MA or anything like that because I just wanted to get into the work of the church. I wanted to get into just moving forward and helping people in their lives. So I never got around to it. And at this point, with two toddlers and kind of set in life, I don't want to go back to school. And quite honestly, and I know you two have kind of experienced this a little bit, my undergrad was in theology, and I've heard from people and friends that you get into the education part, a lot of that master's is just regurgitation of the stuff that you learn in your bachelor's. You know, unless
depends
you're
on where you did your bachelor's.
Yeah, well, exactly. Unless you're like Alan and you're moving into a completely different religious context. And at this point, I don't want to go back to school. I don't want to pay thousands of dollars to do a job in a progressive church because, you know, you need a master's of divinity. Thousands of dollars, all that time away from my family and what I could be doing for a job that I'm already qualified for, except for that education, except for that piece of paper. And quite honestly, there are pastors that I've heard, you know, that they don't use that. Their sermons aren't these theological masterpieces that are a culmination of all their education with their masters. And they're horrible with people and all this kind of stuff that seminary wouldn't teach you anyway. So now I'm at a place where I'm I guess the equivalent of an associate minister at a church, which I love. I love the church. I love the people. I love my work. But I also am aware that at some point there's going to be an ending point and I can't move any forward because for me, this is the career path I chose. So money-wise, I can't do it. And the church structure needs a lot of work. And all the negative experiences that I've had have motivated me to want to try, at least in some way, be a part of a solution. And I feel like because of where I came from and where I am now, personally, and they're strong words, but this is how I feel. I feel pushed out. I feel like I have to mourn and lament something that I love to do and can't do in a way that would sustain me and my family any longer, or at least in the future.
So it seems like there's a pretty wide consensus among people who are in at least younger generations that from this study, from things that we've talked about, from a lot of people we've talked to through the show, so on and so forth, there's a huge consensus that whether you're conservative, mainline, evangelical, the church structure as we know it today is kind of broken for several reasons. And so I think the question boils down to whether we stay in it and try to fix it, like you just articulated, Jeff. Like there's something about church that you love and you want to stay in it and you want to fix it. You want to make it better and heal the brokenness. And you recognize that being a community is maybe some brokenness is sort of inherent in it. But there's a whole other approach of people who say, I feel like this is holding me back and I don't think it can be fixed and I'm over it, you know? So that's interesting. It's interesting what would precondition you to choose either approach. And maybe it's your personal experience, you know?
It's also your, I think what preconditions you is what you believe church is, what you've been told and what you've learned, like the nature of the church is, because everybody has different, they call it in theological terms, ecclesiology, like what you believe about what the church is determines how you're going to react in a shifting culture. We can look at this issue from a sociological vantage point where people are no longer trusting institutions on a wide scale. There's no brand loyalty like there used to be. Church is not as seated in power anymore. People have been talking about for years the fall of Christendom, where Christianity rose with Rome and has been a part of political atmosphere, and especially in America for so long, but in the last 50 years has tanked pretty hard. And so all of those things kind of converge. And I think what we believe about the church will determine kind of what we do about it. For some people, churches are bishops, right? I think that's the Eastern Church. Eastern Orthodox, the presence of a bishop is the church. In Roman Catholic churches, it's the serving of mass. The communion is what constitutes a church. And then for some of us that are like these children of the Protestant Reformation, we think church is the teaching of the Bible or whatever. And that's something we've held on to. But as we move away from these definitions, it gets less and less defined for us. And so people are struggling to see like, well, why do I need a priest or a bishop or the preaching, right? Like the talking at me of God's word. And so there's all of those things getting questioned leads us to, well, what do I do now?
I would say it's a little bit different for me, Alan, personally, in that the rhetoric of what the church says that it is different from what it actually is.
Sure.
There's a lot, and I've left because there's even in really great, pretty healthy communities, there's a lot of rhetoric of like, this is a very inclusive community. This is very loving and, you know, wonderful and familial. But then my actual experience of the church behind closed doors with the leadership is running people into the ground and expecting too much commitment and not treating people in a humanizing way. And the lecturing kind of thing, like, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've gone to a sermon and heard a pastor say, you know, this is a conversation between, you know, and I'm like, no, it's not. This is a monolith. This is you talking at us. For me, it's not even about a definition of church. It's a discrepancy between what the church says it is and actually is in action.
For sure.
And that frustrates the hell out of me. I can't handle it. It feels duplicitous.
Absolutely. Well,
part of the reason is people that want to be friendly, that want to be humanizing, they have this rigid polity, all the, like we said before, bureaucracy, all these things that they have to do, committees, all the boxes that have to be checked. They're all trying to balance this. And so it feels to me like when new people come, it's almost predatory. Like, we have all these slots that need to be filled, and this person, we want to welcome them and appreciate them for who they are. But at the same time, we need to get them as quickly as we can in serving in a certain way. And that's looking at it from a negative perspective.
We got to get them plugged in, Alan.
Yeah, but I think a better way is like discovering what people are passionate about and allowing them to create in the church atmosphere. So I think all of these problems don't have to be problems. But what we don't really have is a viable alternative. We don't see churches, for the most part, there's a lot of experimentation going on, but a lot of the churches I've seen that have tried to break out of this mold and try to somehow reach the duns or just at least change so they're not creating the same problem that the institutional church has created in the past, they tend to be filled with people who hate church. And so it's like, how do you do, or at least are just completely done with it? So how do you do community with people that don't like community, or that don't like the way communities, or they all have these traumatic pasts? So when they get together, that's like the vision of what they're of what church has been. It's hard to see past that into something more new and authentic. So maybe the church just needs to die for like 10 years and then come back as something completely different.
Or maybe we need new thermometers to take the temperature of the church. Because honestly, working in churches on both sides of the fence at this point, the barometer is always Sunday morning. Are people coming to our worship services? And if people aren't coming to our worship services, we don't consider them part of the church. And maybe part of the problem is that we're not widening what we consider, who we consider as part of the church. Maybe someone who doesn't like to come on a Sunday morning, we don't have to not consider them a part of a church. If they're doing something that they feel is limited by our organization, but they're connected to us in relationship and love and fellowship or whatever word you want to use for that, then why not keep them on the member list, even if they're not coming on a Sunday morning?
Well, if people don't want to be considered members, then they shouldn't be considered members. And I say this like thinking about, okay, apologies for this metaphor, but dating these days, people are way non-committal. And I don't think it's because they don't want to commit. I think it's because, this is my theory, I think it's because the person you're with says something about you. They represent you.
Yeah.
And if you're with some dingus, like, it's embarrassing, right? Like, if I affiliate with the church and the church makes decisions or does things that I don't agree with and I'm embarrassed by, then I don't want that to be attached to my identity. And so I think there's something really crucial here that instead of just, like you said, Jeff, instead of writing these people off, the duns, writing them off, saying, okay, what are they actually trying to tell us? They're trying to tell us that they're embarrassed by what churches are doing, or they disagree. They're conscientious objectors. And maybe we can consider it a prophetic movement, a movement of conscience to leave, to say, I'm done affiliating with this, you know?
Yes, I agree. But I also think that part of that is the fact that the church has placed bureaucracy on what they consider someone, how they consider someone is part of the church. Like, why are the reasons like people aren't coming?
Well, it's difficult, right? Because there has to be structure of some kind in any organization. Mm-hmm. And so bureaucracy, I mean, it tends to get all lumped into the term bureaucracy, but there has to be something.
Yes. Yes, there does. And I think that maybe that's just a structure thing, is why does it have to be a worship service? Why does that have to be the way in which we consider someone is involved in the church? Like, that's my part of the problem, is that, and this is a theory that I've had for a long time, is that the way we do church, we've too much intertwined with our theology. So it's easy to throw away, like, like, for instance, we entered into this episode by cutting out a part of our show that's been there since the beginning, because it's not important to us as much as the content and why we're doing this in the first place. But people who are running churches, they've interwoven that idea of why they're doing it with the way that they do it. So when you take away a part of what they do, it's so close that you feel like you've also taken a part of why they do it. And I think that's a huge problem, because if we have no flexibility or creativity with the way that we gather and the way that we choose to define who we are as a community and organize that community, then we're making it about the organization. And when you make it about the organization and not the purpose or reason for that organization, then you become a bureaucracy. It becomes about the structure and not the people.
One thing that you said stood out to me, Jeff, about worship in particular, why worship has to be the center of the Christian church experience. It kind of reminds me of things that we've talked about in the past, that maybe, I'm just going to throw this out there, maybe the concept of worship in general is becoming passé. Like, culturally, we can't relate to adoring a divine overarching God that is above us and giving God worship and penance, you know, that we can't relate to making that the center. And a lot of people really balk at that and grieve at that, but maybe that's the idea, that being the church no longer is resonant with this really culturally strange practice of gathering and singing songs to an other. That's really meta, but
maybe. But from what I've read, it's not that the people who are called the nuns or who are done with church, like, don't want to worship, don't want to read the Bible and talk about it, don't want to do all these things. It's just that the way that it's been done doesn't feel authentic, because it's this packaged thing that has been given to us by someone else, and we have to do it the way that they've always done it. And there's very little room to innovate, and there's very little support to innovate from people who have been in power for so long or whatever. A lot of the people that I've talked to, it's not that they don't want to worship. You know, it's that they've been told church is committee meetings, or church is, you know, having XYZ. It is the bureaucracy of the church, instead of the church is, and this is in my estimation, like the Holy Spirit bringing people together, God bringing people together. And so whether that looks one way or another, I don't know.
Well, no, I agree. I think that we're looking at it in terms of what we've experienced individually and people that we've talked to. And part of the problem is a church that recognizes, okay, we need to do something, we need to change something, they'll go to these outside sources and rarely start what within and just say, the church is about the people. And if the structure that we have doesn't represent who we are as people, or the structure is creating an environment that attracts a certain type of person that is not conducive to what they hope the church is supposed to look like, then there has to be a place to start with who you are in that moment, and not trying to grasp at something because you want people to come, as opposed to, we just want to be ourselves. And what's the best way to communicate that so that we attract the people that would want to be here?
It should be a healing place. It should be a safe place of healing. It should be a family.
And I feel like church growth movements and stuff like that have distorted what the church is about.
Absolutely. I wanted to talk about missions for a minute, because gone are the days where it's appropriate culturally to knock on your Muslim neighbor's door and try to convert them. That's just not okay anymore. I'm sorry for those of you who want to hang on to this like old colonial model of missionizing. So what does it mean to transform the community? Because it's one thing to try to create, you know, this insular community that just tries to heal it, people within it. But if you only have that, people burn out quickly, because you just end up kind of navel gazing after a while. You have to have some sort of external focus as well, some sort of mission, some sort of purpose. And so what does it mean for churches to transform their communities and be at the edge of social change anymore? Well, if you're not going to really hop on the bandwagon of civil rights and ending homophobia and ending racism and xenophobia and all of these things, if you're not going to make that part of your identity and bring the gospel into interpretation, or that as an interpretation of the gospel of social justice, then what are you left with? Because you can't politically, in a politically correct sense, be the old evangelizing model anymore. So churches are having to make this giant decision. Do we become radically inclusive and radically leftist and, you know, progressive leaning? And if we don't, what's our identity anymore? Because, you know, like, I want to refer back to what this website, theduns.com, are saying. These statistics, only 20% of Americans attend church. 4,000 churches will close this year. 4,000 churches. And 2.7 million church members will fall into inactivity this year. So millions of people every year are leaving. Mm-hmm. And these aren't young people. These are people who've been serving the church for years. Many are pastors. So this website is asking these questions, like, who are these people? Where are they going? And what are they doing? But because they aren't done with God and they aren't done with living a Christian message, they're done with the format of church as it has been done. Even though there's, like you said, Alan, a lot of experimentation, a lot of people trying new things, pub churches, emerging churches, home churches, you know, things that are more conversational, but people are still done. Like, maybe, where are they going?
maybe we can latch onto the very first thing that we talked about was the idea, or that you said, was the idea that people leave to do more rather than less. And I think the model, at least what we talked about in seminary and the books we read, we're moving in a shift from being attractional churches where we say the worship happens at the church, we need to get everybody to come to a service. And instead of that being our mindset, you know, like, have your neighbors come do this, there's a new push to be missiological. I think that's missional. And that's where you equip people to go out and do things in their own communities. And so that shift is probably a much more healthy one. And I don't know if this nuns thing, it's new. This is a new study that's come out. The missional conversation has been going on for at least the past 10 years or whatever. But the idea is, do you feel like you are more equipped with time and resources to actually be a Christian in your neighborhood by going to a church? Or are you sapped and tired and bitter and have a very difficult time even being a Christian because you go to church? And if I think a lot of these people would answer, they don't have the time or the resources to pour into their communities because they're being taken away and doing these things. It's not that the worship, I don't think it's that the worship atmosphere is a negative thing. I think that it's just too demanding. And it's too demanding for things that people don't find bring life to them. And many people do like committee meetings or those kinds of things. And so there are some people who still go to it and still try to keep the thing going. But whatever situation we're in, especially these churches, the 4,000 that are closing, all the ones that are left, we have to, and me, I work in a church, we have to ask the hard question of, are we actually empowering people or are we just draining them? Right.
That's a really interesting way to put it. And I can share an anecdote from my personal life. When I was still going to church and when I just had decided to leave music ministry. So I grew up the daughter of music ministers. My whole family did worship ministry. And so we, you know, spend hours every week doing the worship services, practicing and so on and so forth. And so if you believe that, and so I don't want to disparage this at all. If this is how people connect to God, awesome. Like, If you believe that worshiping God is the highest form of being human, and that is the most effectual thing that you can do, because when you adore God, when you worship God, God acts more in the world or comes close to the world and does more things and heals more people. If you believe, then that is your center of connecting. But if you're like me and you spent all of these years doing music ministry and worshiping God in the church and leading the music services, and then one day you looked around and said, oh my word, we've spent all this time and resources and thousands of dollars on music equipment and sound systems, and the world is really screwed up and it's not getting any better. In fact, it's getting worse. Like, all of that time that I spent, all of those hours in worship services, like, it felt really empty all of a sudden. And I'm not trying to disparage people who do this for a living, including my parents, who are wonderful people. But for me, it became really empty. And I would rather spend that 10 hours a week making a really beautiful meal for my friends who are in a tough spot and just being with them and being amongst them. And that, to me, is what Jesus did. Jesus didn't spend time in the synagogue very much. Jesus was out and about hanging out with people, basically. Yeah. You know, so when did it shift? When did it shift that church became the main focus?
As legitimate as the worship service is, and as legitimate as your parents' ministry is, and all of the good things that happen when a community come together and worship, that eventually gets tied into benefiting the church bureaucracy and structure. And so I think for some of us, it's hard to tease that out. Like, you making a meal for your friends doesn't bring money in and tithing and put, you know, butts in the seats and then have all of our lights need to be. I've heard this so many times.
Yeah,
they do the offering because they need to have all the lights turn on, right? And like, this, I really think, and this is my opinion, for me personally, when the church operates on survival, when the goal is just to keep a building, just to keep an organization or whatever, we've completely lost sight of what the church actually is.
I'm going to defend this a little bit more, Alan. I'm going to counter that a little bit. Okay. Because I think there is something legit to say, hey, we have a really good message. And you know what gets people to come is they really enjoy the nice music. That's not just survival. That's actually creating an environment where people feel like they can interact with God and come and find healing. And yes. I will say yeah. something really cool for the church that my parents work. They have an amazing equivalent of AA that they do. And they have like dozens and dozens of people every week who come and, you know, get help with addiction and substance abuse, which is awesome. And the music helps keep them there. The music helps them feel comfortable. And that church wouldn't be what it was without great music. And I wouldn't be who I am as a musician without great music. So I think it's more complicated than that.
I'm not saying that's all that there is.
Yeah.
What I was saying is that becomes a higher priority than you actually living in community with the people that live around you. Does that make sense? Because it feeds into the life of the church. And so sometimes churches get into that like routine where like we are the most important thing that has ever existed. There is nothing more important right now than people come here and sit and listen to me and worship together. Honestly,
that's how they survive.
That's the whole point. I believe personally the church is super important. I think we should be doing everything we can to change and adapt and reclaim some of the things that are original. But I would never say you going to church is more important than you being a human being. You going to churches, you should be sacrificing some of the ways that you can be connected to people in your community and you know, all those things, because it's more important that you just shut your life down and then come and do the way that I've told you to do church. And so for me, like the communities that become like that, that inflate self-importance instead of being humble, missional, and empowering people, that becomes almost predatory. And it's like we've said before, a self-fulfilling prophecy, like we are important, you know? And so it becomes this community that's very inward focused and
does some services. But I understand how it gets there though, because people are working there full time and they're protecting their livelihoods.
Yeah.
And people don't tie.
Yeah. And none of that is illegitimate. I don't want to look at all these churches and say you're not doing it right. You know, you're illegitimate, all this other stuff. I'm just speaking as someone who has been behind the closed doors, who has seen the way that it is and like seen the way pastors and other people, like there's a lot invested. And if it fails, then like our whole conception of God in the world fails. Like if there's no churches open right now, God is still in the world. God is still in human beings. Jesus is still working through, and this is ecclesiology, Jesus is still working through the people. We're like the prophet in the Old Testament that said, God, if there's no righteous people left in the city, and God responds, you have no idea. There's all kinds of righteous people in the city. I have people worshiping me everywhere. They may not be with you. They may not be doing it the way you're doing it, but there are people everywhere that are connecting with me.
Well, maybe gone are the days that you can have a monopoly on truth. Like that people just inherently mistrust that. If it's like our church is the best, people are going to be like, really?
Yeah.
That's a big old claim you're making there.
But you have to make that claim because there's 30 churches down the street, right?
So we can analyze this through economics, right? You have this internal volunteer socialist system that is a church. People are opting to give money to keep it afloat and to keep it cohesive and together. But that entity is also competing with other churches. So it's really hard with the model that it is, because people don't go to churches in their neighborhood anymore. They drive across town to go to the church they like because we can do that. And so with the current model as it is, how are we not going to be shoppers and consumers in that model?
Yeah.
The very setup of it itself is conducive to creating people into shoppers. I don't know. I don't know if I have any answers.
It's like the real estate bubble pop. Is what this is.
Maybe so. People are like, oh, all these houses are the same and they're built with crappy equipment and materials, and it doesn't matter which one I choose because they all have the same issues. So I'm going to go move to another town. I don't know.
Well, I think that kind of going back to what you said earlier, Mona, that idea of what churches say don't necessarily match who they are. If you're talking about the idea of worship and your experience, where I would say that if you sat down and talked to anyone in a church, they would say, well, no, of course, that's not what it's all about. But I would say that the structure and the communication from the pulpit or from the stage or whatever does say that's what it's all about. And maybe it's part of the rhetoric, in the sense that we've separated what the biblical sense of church means as far as people, and we've attached it to a building and a place and an organization. And that over time has created a distinction in our mind that when we read about the church in the Bible, we automatically and wrongly associate it with the place that we go.
What? Okay, that's awesome. But what is the biblical vision of church?
Well, I think that the quote-unquote biblical notion of church is as simple as just people who believed in the teachings of Jesus and believed that there was a practical way to change the world in which they were in which they were, their context was oppression to various extents. Like they were under the rule of someone else. There are people that are trying to transition and deal with this idea of, you know, we were this kingdom or nation and now we're kind of in this place and now we have this whole new way to think and interact with the world because of this man, Jesus. Let's do something. You know what I mean? It was just about people.
I like to think of church as being like the movement of the Holy Spirit because they had a great idea of what church was going to look like. The apostles had all the teachings. They elected people to serve. But then something radical happened. Like the Spirit moved people into areas that didn't have synagogues or their Gentiles were and totally shook up what it was supposed to look like and what these communities look like. And we've somehow kept the institutional mindset that some people had instead of following where God is calling us into. And maybe right now, this whole upheaval, the Spirit is leading us, God is leading us into a new way of being where we are and more contextualized instead of holding on to some of the elements of culture that were a part of the first century church.
Well, and also the early church was all Jewish. So them being called the church was completely exclusive to their religious practices. And we've mixed them. So there was, you know, the early Christians who were Jews, they were going to church, synagogue. But that's not where their work was happening. The church was something different. It was, there was a delineation between worship, between religious practice and what they did and how they interacted with the world around us. And we don't have that delineation anymore, which is, I think, why people are frustrated. Is how many times I've been, every church I've been in, people have wanted to start something or do something, and they feel they need to get to this place where they ask the church permission to do this work or that work, start this ministry or that ministry, because the church has put itself in the position of, you know, being like a overlords probably too.
Hey, I worked at a church where there was a spontaneous group of students who started playing soccer with neighborhood kids right outside the church. And they started doing it once a week and they were doing it in the parking lot of the church. And it was this fantastic thing, but no joke, the elder board like clamped down on it and said, you didn't go through the proper channels of like outreach and,
oh, good Lord,
mission. So you can't play soccer with the kids. Like what?
They probably didn't really communicate to the kid the proper channel in the first place and didn't invite them to do that anyway. You know what I mean? Like I've been in so many churches where like it's not really made clear on a regular basis. Like, hey, if you want to, there was one church I went to that did this, but they're like, hey, if you want to start a thing, just get one more person and write up a little description and bring it to our board. And they would say this on a regular basis. And so I had a pretty clear understanding of what it took to go through the appropriate channels. But a lot of churches don't take the time to think about how they're being perceived. They just have done this the same amount of years and all the people who've been there forever and know the process. But you have to have all this specialized knowledge just to exist in that community.
The verbiage over time puts people in a place where they feel like I can't do anything without the church. Instead of the church saying, and I think it would be as simple as a consistent rewording of stuff like that, depending upon the church structure, saying, hey, tell us what you're doing. How can we help? As opposed to, you know, if you want to do something, check with us first.
I heard this really amazing model of church that I thought was interesting that it's called, it's proposed as a well digging model. So instead of, okay, what happens typically is we have a community, we build walls around the community to protect the community, and we ask people inside the community to conform so the community makes sense. And then anybody who wants to get in has to climb over all these walls. And we say we want diversity. We say we want different people. But by the time they get done climbing in the walls, they become enculturated. And that we have so many demands on them that they have to dress like us and look like us and talk like us. That by the time they get inside, they're no longer different. They're conformed, right? And instead, what if we had a model where people just, the church was to dig a well and to invite anyone who wanted to come just sit around it and be there. There's no walls. There's no requirements for what you have to know or how you have to act or how you have to dress to be around that well. It's just a place of life and life-givingness. And for me, if I can just say one more thing about this, for me, what most churches give me the willies. Like they make my skin crawl because there is so much in hospitality, as far as real relationship, I don't feel like when I walk in most churches that they really want to get to know me. They want to greet me and say their little script of welcome to our place. And it feels very robotic and Stepfordy. And I don't feel that the current structure in most places is conducive to really getting to build real relationships. So that's one of the reasons I left, to be honest.
A different way of saying that is belonging before believing. It used to be you had to believe to belong. You had to conform. You had to do all these things. But in this new era that we're in, it's more important to people to belong before they have to believe. So digging a well is saying like, hey, you're invited. Come belong. You can come hang out with us and we'll really engage you as a person, as opposed to you have to go through all these hoops to get there. And I've read it actually in a book called Church After Christendom. They use the same analogy. It's not the same analogy, but it's the same idea of the centered set and the bounded set model of that. That's like mathematical terms of church, where like either you have a core of something's happening, you're a community that's centered, I don't know, around Jesus's teachings or some sort of spirituality, and there is no outside bounds where you say you have to agree to all these theological things before you can be a part of us. And so those are two very different models of church, but we've almost always had this outward bounded church where everything was really clear on the outside and nobody knew exactly why we did what we did. We just knew who we were because of the things that we weren't. And instead, we're a better way to do church is have the center really clear. Like, we are here for one another, for community, and we're, something is happening with Jesus. Like, we're focused on Jesus. But then everything else in this outside is super fuzzy. Like, you don't have to subscribe to all these things to be a part of us. Two very different models of doing it.
A friend of mine who is a pediatric chaplain in San Francisco once told me that he sought out a church denomination that had no stated creed. So like, you know, a lot of churches have the blasphemy. I believe in. Well, and I'll tell you why in a second. It's really fascinating what his thought process was for this. So most churches have like a center, like this is what we believe and you have to affirm this to be part of us. Or they'll have like the Apostles' Creed or something like centralized in their belief structure, kind of like what you were saying, Alan, that they require the agreement on belief. My friend decided that he wanted a church that specifically did not have that because he read a study about children playing on a playground. So anthropologists were watching children playing on a playground. In playgrounds where there was a fence around the playground, the kids would go to the outer boundaries and be really scattered and hang by the fence and look outside the fence and wonder what was beyond the fence and interact with the fence. In playground settings where there was no fence, the kids tended to clump together in the center and play around the, you know, the centralized figures, like the people watching them, the people, the leader kids. They tended to group together more, converse more, and interact with each other more rather than the boundaries. And he said that was his model for choosing church, that he wanted somewhere that would have really fluid, porous outsides, but that would be really sort of centralized in relationship in the middle. And I think that kind of goes along with what you're saying. And I found that so interesting that like when we have walls, we tend to want to push them. Tend to want to interact with them and punch them. And I don't know what, you know, I feel like I'm rambling at this point. But you can cut this part out, Jeff.
So someone listening might say, though, like, if you don't stand for something, you stand for nothing. I can go. And I feel the same way. There are some churches that may be super progressive or, I don't know, Unitarian or something, or that maybe not specifically that, but they have so little definition that it's like, you know, this is a community event. I mean, it's not even. So where's the difference between a church and a club? You know what I mean? Like there has to be some sort of playground equipment for us to come to. And like, what exactly is that?
I think it's a difference between, you know, show and tell. Is if I put something in writing to say, this is what we believe, then for the most part, I'm also shackling us to this is what we're always going to believe. Because it leaves little room to kind of move that forward. But if we like, you know, we don't need to tell people that we believe, you know, it's important to connect with the community because look, here's some, you know, pictures on our website or events that really like highlight this is what we're doing. So I think those specific events can have that specific as far as this is the purpose of this gathering is to for relationship. This is the purpose of this gathering is to help these people in the community. When we talk about people gathering, especially if you're going to be a church, obviously your banner is Christianity, Jesus, the Bible, whatever. But in the way that church is set, there's not a lot or any room to to talk about those things. There's only room to hear about those things from this Bible study teacher, from this preacher. But who on a Sunday morning can sit down and say, well, I have a question about this or I have a question about that? Because the insinuation is if someone says something from the pulpit and you think differently, it's hard not to feel like, man, maybe I'm wrong or maybe I don't fit, as opposed to a home group where someone says this and you say this, and then an interaction is started because of those opposing views or opinions.
That just reminded me of a conversation I had with my family recently. I've been talking a lot about my childhood church with my parents over the past couple of years. And sometimes I'll say something and they say, hey, we had the totally opposite experience. Like, we didn't experience that or hear that or feel or interpret that. And I realized what was happening was we would go to church on Sunday. I would hear from the pastor. And as a kid, I just assumed, like, okay, he's just saying the truth. Like, I literally, there's no critical thinking needed necessarily. They're not telling you to doubt or question or think for yourself. It's just like, this is what you need to believe, right? So I got that as a kid, and I reacted against it in my college experience. Whereas my parents went to the same church and heard the same messages for the most part. And they belonged to a home group that would discuss what they heard. They would even disagree with the pastor. They would, you know, there was mitigating factors, and they would somehow felt like they were able to question that in community and still keep going there. And so for me, there's like totally two different experiences.
And those experiences are defined by the setting that you're in. Your experience was no conversation, not with people, all about the service structure, hearing from one person. And their context was discussion, freedom, in a way that we're interacting with one another.
What do you do in the age of the internet where you can get a lot better information online than your pastor's sermon?
I know, right?
Yeah. And for sure, the sermon model has been the primary for so many years because it comes out of the age before printing was popular and the internet, and you couldn't get any other information. You couldn't get educated besides going to church on Sunday mornings. That's not the case anymore. There's probably half the people sitting in the room are smarter than the pastor and might know more.
And that's something, right? I always tell people to be sensitive to. If you're going to make a comment on some subject, just know that there's an expert out there somewhere who might know.
Yeah.
I think
why do we hold to this old sermon model? I'm sorry. Well, I know you guys preach and I respect you, but
the whole church model is like, I've heard it before. It's an agrarian model. And the whole community would come together during harvest time, right? And so the whole community would come and listen, and just the way that church is even set up and the functions of it. There's a good book that I had a professor that wrote called like the McDonaldization of Church or something like that. Basically, we're operating on the model that was given to us an entirely different era of human history, right? You have all these big eras, and the latest one was the farming model. Like, the farming community is what gave birth to church as we know it. And so now we're no longer in a farming community. People are fluid. They leave. I just read an article on ghosting, which is like, have you heard of ghosting in relationships?
It's when people just disappear and stop talking to you. It really sucks. Don't do it. It's not nice.
Yeah, you just disappear. You never even have a breakup or closure or anything. And like, that's what a lot of relationships, especially relationships with church, have become. People ghost churches. They'll go for a few days or for a few weeks and they disappear and don't have that hard breakup conversation. And I'm not saying that they should feel like they have to or anything like that, but in the agrarian society, there was no option for that. You were literally in the field the next day with the entire family, with the whole community. There was no option to just leave and have this anonymous sort of existence. So I'm not saying that it's good or bad. I'm not saying the farming, everyone needs to be a farmer or anything like that. I'm just saying that there's a very different way of doing society, and church hasn't quite caught up. So you can look at it that way.
I would say church hasn't quite caught up is an understatement.
Well, church can no longer claim to be a cultural social center. Yeah. Facebook is the cultural. If you even think that people, you're the only place where people can go and connect and be real with each other, because that's what churches love to say. Let's just be together and be real with each other. But there are so many other ways and better ways for people to connect nowadays. So what are we left with?
I do have to say one thing though. As somebody who works in a church where it's largely of an older generation, I do find something there that I do not find other places. I love Facebook. I love pubs. I love all of this, all of my life that I experience that's not church. It's all valuable, and I connect to our community. We have community events where we walk, the whole neighborhood goes together. But when I go to church, I experience cross-generational stuff like I don't experience anywhere else.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and so the question is, like, do you have some sort of responsibility to different generations, to kids all the way through seniors, to people who do life differently? And if you do, like, how can you create and foster a community where we experience all of life like that instead of this insanely fractured? So it may seem like we're all together because of Facebook and stuff like that, but I see our communities insanely fractured more than ever. Like, we used to live together, but now it's like everybody that even shows up on my Facebook thinks like me, right? There's algorithms that filter people out that disagree with me because I don't like their posts or whatever. And so our little bubbles are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And the church should be, if it wants to be countercultural and it wants to create the playground that attracts people, we should really move in a direction where we say, like, this is different than everything else. Like, this is where people of all different ages can come and interact with one another. And instead of being, but still, instead of weighing people down and preventing them from doing something and that they believe God is leading them to do, just be a place of empowering.
So I'm torn by that because I like the idea of that. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of, like, going to a place every week, and if I don't show up, people worry about me and, like, make sure I'm okay, like a family. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, my millennial predisposition is to be terrified by being dependent on that. And also, I don't want to waste my darn time on people that I think are dumb. I'm sorry, but I'm just going to say it. And not that I think old people are dumb. I'm not saying that. I know a lot of kick-ass old people who are way cooler than me. But what I mean is that I don't want to spend a lot of time on people who see the world very differently from me and trying to get along with them and trying to make them my family when clearly we have nothing in common and we don't connect. I don't want to spend my precious life on that, trying to make that happen. If that's my only option.
That's an interesting point.
If that's my only option, then okay. But I can go out and find other people who I really enjoy spending time with and feel fulfilled by relationally and psychologically and emotionally.
I must say my initial reaction to what you're saying is, like, that's kind of a selfish way to live or whatever. But I think there's some wisdom in that I have sometimes.
YOLO, man. YOLO.
Yeah. I don't know, though. That can be just as isolating and create in you what you don't like to see in other people.
I'm so happy, though.
I'm assuming the reason you don't have things in common with other people is because they're closed off and they've become a certain way or whatever. You don't want to spend your time doing things that feel like a waste of time.
Yeah, that's a big one for me, to be honest.
Yeah, and sometimes I do look at what happens in churches, and it's like sometimes it is a waste of time. It's like you're talking to yourself in the mirror almost when you have worship services. Sometimes, not always.
I don't know. These are great questions. So what's your takeaway from this, you guys? Like, as working in a church, talking to a den.
My church needs to survive, so no, just kidding. We have to somehow attract you to come here. No, but that's what this conversation turns into. And I think what's important is that we just start listening without having motives to just continue our organizations. But people like me who are still in the church and who still serve the institutional church, we need to start listening better without motives.
Man, I think the time for listening is done. Like, we've listened, we've heard it all. I think it's time. We got to change stuff. I think part of the reason is we don't know how, or a lot of Christianity doesn't know how to interact with the world around them without church. And if leaders in the church, you know, if we're going from the model of there's a heavy responsibility on leaders, if leaders are supporting and defending their structure and they're not holding it loosely, then I think they're being super irresponsible and are largely a part of why the church and many segments of society is dying, because they've failed to figure out how to interact with the world and have expected the world to interact with them. And I think that's ridiculous. And I think that it's time for us to let go of a bunch of crap in order to really reach people where they're at in a way that is real and in a way that, and I hate the word authentic because it's been used so much, but it's fitting, like, really authentic. When was the last time you heard and not in a self-deprecating way or discouraging way, but just a leader say, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know why this is here. And there are moments like that where it just feels sad and pathetic, but there are moments like that that really spark something new and amazing. And I think that the church is not transparent enough when they're expecting to create a place where people are going to be transparent.
That's awesome. I think that's really well said.
And maybe we should just stop talking and start doing, right?
Exactly.
Stop talking about how awesome we are and just be awesome.
You guys, this podcast has been fun, but I got to go be awesome. So see you later. You see you never.
You have to be here.
I'm done with the podcast. I'm not done. That's a lie.
your face is smushed up against the fence and you just want to leave, but you can't.
I know.
Well, let us know what you think. If you have anything to add to this conversation for this week, you can comment on the show notes at irenicast.com/. There you'll find informational links to go a little deeper on this week's topic. And also don't forget to check out our question of the week on Facebook. Yeah. So next up, was it Hitler? This is a segment that Mona has been pushing for a long time now. She really wanted to do some Hitler quotes. So here it is. So how this is going to work.
No, listen. No, hold on a moment. I don't have a love for Hitler. It's interesting to me that a lot of Hitler's rhetoric and a lot of rhetoric of fundamentalists is very laden with theological language. But in fact, they don't have good intentions toward all of humanity. So I thought it'd be interesting to compare Hitler quotes to other quotes from other people and see if we can tell the difference.
Yes. Yes. And we're just giving you a hard time. We love you, Mona.
Right. Right. Okay.
Even if you love Hitler.
I don't love Hitler. This is a rumor start, Jeff.
I know, right?
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
I should erase the tweet that I was about to send then. No, just joking.
We'll just tell everybody you like fundamental preaching.
It's true.
That's what I'll say.
Okay.
Anyway, right. So how this is going to work, it's very similar. Well, not very similar, but it's a little bit similar to our Jesus or Jay-Z. So each of us has a quote, and basically we ask the question, was it Hitler? And if it was, then we get a point that Alan likes to keep track of the score. And then,
no sense in the world if there's no score.
That's true. Speaking like
that was Hitler.
Okay. So, Mona, why don't you go ahead and start? Give us your first quote.
Sure. The folkish-minded man in particular has the sacred duty, each in his own denomination, of making people stop just talking superficially about God's will and actually fulfill God's will and not let God's will be desecrated. For God's will gave men their form, their essence, and their abilities. Anyone who destroys his work is declaring war on the Lord's creation, the divine will.
It's creepy, whoever it is.
Yeah, and I can't tell if you did the redirect with the German accent. And it's so... I feel like I've read that in a book, so...
You know, like, say it, pastor.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go with Hitler, just to be counter.
Well, it's from Mein Kampf.
Very nice.
Volume 2, Chapter 10. That is Hitler. Good job, Jeff.
So
isn't that amazing, though?
Irony. Like, yeah, yeah.
Anyone declares war on the Lord's creation.
So that's part of the reason I get uncomfortable when people talk about, oh, it was God's will that I do this, and oh, it's God's will that I do that. And it's
Hitler said it. Hitler said it first.
Yeah, like that's kind of a big assumption. You know what I mean? Like, God's will is not a rubber stamp. You just keep stamping everything that happened in your life. Oh, this is what God wanted to happen. That's uncomfortable for me. Anywho, how about this?
This is really uncomfortable and borderline offensive. And we're not trying to, I just want to say, we're not trying to make light of Hitler or anti-Semitism or the plight of the Jewish diaspora.
Moda wants to be borderline, so.
Well, no, I want to point out that fundamentalism has a sound to it and we should question it. That's why. Yep. This has a point to it.
Religion can be used in horrible, horrible ways, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. It is better to lose your life than to waste it.
That is
Paul
John Piper.
Yeah, I would say not Hitler.
Yep, it was a book by Piper. And that was a direct quote from his book. Better to lose your life than to waste it.
All right, you ready? No matter what happens in life, be good to people. Being good to people is a wonderful legacy to leave behind.
I think that was Hitler.
Wow. That's crazy if it is. I'll say Hitler also, because it's going to be a redirect.
It's Joel Osteen. No, I'm just joking. It really is Hitler.
Oh, my God.
Oh. Yep, that's Hitler.
Or daily least, lessons from Hitler.
Yeah. Although, I'm when I was going through this, I was like, is that really Hitler? So, I hope maybe it's, I don't know, it's wrong.
You know, when Jesus says in the New Testament, like, teacher, teach yourself. Like, do you ever wonder when people are talking, be like, do you listen to yourself? Like, just go stand in the mirror for like an hour and talk to yourself.
Well, not to be crude. I think it's all in definitions, like
definition of what's a person.
Who do you find a person? Yeah. Who do you define as a person?
That's horrifying to have to make that call. Okay. How about this? Humanitarianism is the expression of stupidity and cowardice.
Hitler.
Piper.
No, it's Hitler.
Okay.
All right, I got another one. We don't ask the Almighty, Lord, make us free. We want to be active, to work together, so that when the hour comes that we appear before the Lord, we can say to him, Lord, you see that we have changed.
I don't know.
I'm going to just go with Hitler again.
Yeah, I'll go with Hitler also.
Also Hitler. This one's also Hitler.
Oh my gosh. See? That's creepy. So I've heard that he does art and stuff too, right? He did.
Started out as an artist, right? A rejected artist.
Something like that, yeah. A lot of like world domination sort of people have done art in some way.
You do art, don't you, Mona?
I do. I think this is especially relevant to us as podcasters. Words build bridges into unexplored regions.
Ooh, beautiful.
I would say that's Hitler. That sounds like a mastermind manipulator to me.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm going to say Jerry Falwell.
My God, we're calling everybody out today.
That was Hitler.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I have one more quote for us.
Good.
Who said, it's easier to fool people than to convince them they have been fooled?
That's Hitler.
No, that's going to be a pastor of some kind.
This was said by the perpetual jokester, Mark Twain.
Nice.
So oftentimes it's in the ridiculousness that you find the true wisdom, and people who have motives that are free from evil intent. I just want to point that out. Boom!
So maybe that's why some of these quotes from Hitler are kind of nice, you know, but it's that.
Oh my God.
They are nice. That was the whole point of the game, is that there's some, you know, there's some truth to that. Words do build bridges into unexplored regions. That's the whole premise of kind of why we do what we do. So,
God, this podcast is ridiculous. We are using words to go to unexplored, ridiculous places.
Yeah.
This was nice, though. I enjoyed this one.
It was.
Even if it included a lot of Hitler. Way too much Hitler.
Mm-hmm. And to quote myself and every other show up to this point, that'll do it for this week. Thank you for joining us. If you like what you hear, you can support the show by going to iTunes and Stitcher to rate, review, and subscribe. And then you can contact us anytime on our feedback page at irenacast.com/feedback. And there you'll find all the ways that you can contact us. So for this week, I'm Jeff.
I'm Mona.
And I'm Al.
Thanks for joining the conversation.